This is a podcast made with madewithopinion.com, and the podcast represents our own opinions, doesn't necessarily represent the formal views or opinions of the employers or institutions. Be aware that medicine is constantly changing and one practitioner may have a different way of doing things from another, and we welcome any comments, suggestions or corrections of errors. This is Dr. Arthur Jackson giving a tutorial on hepatitis B. I'm an infectious diseases physician living in Cork. A lot of people get confused with all of the antigens and antibodies, and I hope I can debunk a lot of the mystique about this, and hopefully it'll make it a lot simpler. As a quick introduction, Hep B is extremely common worldwide. About 2 billion people living in the world out of 7 billion people living in the world got evidence of either previous infection or active infection. Of those 2 billion people, about 350 million people in the world at the moment have chronic hepatitis B. And then why are we concerned about it is because of the long-term risk of cancer and cirrhosis. And if you do absolutely nothing about chronic hepatitis B, about 20 to 30% of those people will go on to get either liver cancer or cirrhosis eventually. Unfortunately, it's difficult to know which people require treatment and exactly when they require treatment, but there are guidelines and practices, and we'll talk about those. Hepatitis B is a viral illness which is spread through contaminated bodily fluids, primarily blood and semen, but also can be found in saliva. It is actually more infectious than hepatitis C or HIV. The first question that comes up is, what are we talking about here? What is chronic hepatitis B? One of the easy ways to look at it is to say hepatitis B is hepatitis B surface antigenemia for longer than 6 months. Acute hepatitis B is the first 6 months of hepatitis B surface antigen positivity, and many people with acute hepatitis B will not go on to get chronic hepatitis B. If you are an adult and you get acute hepatitis B, only a 5% chance of going on to be chronically infected with chronic hepatitis B surface antigenemia. Otherwise, you get the cleared disease with no hepatitis B surface antigenemia, and you can be considered immune. If a young baby, however, gets acute hepatitis B, you flip that percentage on its head, and it's only about a 5% chance of clearing the disease, becoming immune, and a 95% chance of going on to have chronic hepatitis B. Those who do have chronic hepatitis B, that is those who have hepatitis B surface antigenemia going on for longer than 6 months, they have quite a low likelihood of clearing the disease immunologically. Less than 1% per year will end up losing this hepatitis B surface antigen and become immune in the setting of established chronic hepatitis B. Now let's discuss the different serologies. There are a number of different ones to consider, and they give people difficulties, although they should not if you look at them in a methodical way. One of the confusing things is that some people get muddled between antigen and antibody, and especially confusing is that the antibody described is often spoken of in two different ways, but meaning the same thing. I'll explain this in an example. Hepatitis B surface antibody is the same thing as antibody to hepatitis B surface antigen, and both of those are distinct to hepatitis B surface antigen. The same goes for hepatitis B core antibody being the same as antibody to hep B core antigen, although in that scenario the former terminology is much more commonly used, so hep B core antibody is more commonly discussed. And finally, the same nomenclature confusion goes for hepatitis B E antibody, which is the same thing as antibody to hepatitis B E antigen. Let's go over the significance of the various results and apply some logic to the interpretation. One way that I find useful to help demystify this is to ask, what are the scenarios when this result is positive? So let's start with hepatitis B core antibody. This test is a good test to identify those who have been infected with hepatitis B or who are infected with hepatitis B, in that it will be positive in anybody who has been or is actively infected with hepatitis B. And just as a little aside, which hopefully will avoid confusion, you never do a blood test for hepatitis B core antigen, because it is not a circulating antigen in the blood. It exists either on or in the hepatocytes. Now let's discuss hepatitis B surface antigen. So once again, asking, what is the scenario when this result is positive? A positive hepatitis B surface antigen test means you actually have hepatitis B, either acute or chronic. Now let's talk about the antibody to hepatitis B surface antigen, otherwise known as hepatitis B surface antibody. For the antibodies relating to surface antigen or relating to E antigen, you very rarely have both the antibody and the antigen at the same time. Usually the antibody implies immune activity and therefore immunity against the antigen, although early at the time of immunological clearance you can have them both coexisting before the antigen is completely mopped up. So applying this to hepatitis B surface antigen and specifically applying it to the antibody to hepatitis B surface antigen, if you are positive for that, you are likely immune to hepatitis B. This can be through two means. It can be through previous infection or through vaccination. But if it was through previous infection, you should be hepatitis B core antibody positive as well. If it is only through vaccination, you will not have the hepatitis B core antibody. Now let's move on to hepatitis B E antigen. This is a marker that is loosely associated with higher infectivity and higher viral load in earlier phase of infection. I do say loosely because it is not hard and fast. It is not a particularly useful test to do except in patients whom you are deciding to treat, because if you start treatment on someone who is E antigen positive, you can expect to try stopping oral treatment if you end up successfully clearing the antigen and becoming positive for the antibody to hepatitis B E antigen, otherwise known as hepatitis B E antibody. Regarding hepatitis B viral load, this is an intuitive result, although the result is often given in logarithmic form, so to convert it to circulating levels, you have to understand a bit of mathematics. So you put 10 to the power of whatever the logarithmic result is. For example, if the result was 3, a log score of 3, you would have 10 to the power of 3, which is 1,000. A level of 1,000 would tell you that there are 1,000 copies of virus circulating per mil of blood. Once again, viral load is loosely associated with disease activity, but not truly reliably so. Low viral loads are obviously preferred, but not all high viral loads are indicative of severe liver damage. Hepatitis B viral load is very important in monitoring response to treatment. When it comes to hepatitis B, there are 4 textbook classical stages of infection, but this is also an idealized situation and it's quite possible to fluctuate between the classical stages. The first described stage is called the immunotolerant stage, which is not treated. This is usually, inverted commas, early infection. But when we say early, it may last years or decades. It may go on until the patient is in their 20s or later. This is a time when the viral load is extremely high, but there is no actual immune activity against this high circulating virus. The guidelines would suggest just observing these patients until there's a suggestion of significant disease activity or fibrosis. This is a little bit controversial. Some people feel uncomfortable observing extremely high viral load, but it ties in with the understanding that a lot of the damage done to the liver with hepatitis B is done through the immune activity, and the liver gets damaged in the process. The easiest and probably the commonest stage of hepatitis B is what's called the inactive carrier stage. This is characterized by a low viral load and normal LFTs, and basically you can interpret this as the immune system having the hepatitis B under control, and this is not specifically treated. The other two stages are pretty similar, and they're called the immune active stage and the immune reactive stage, and they are stages of hepatitis B where there is signs of disease activity,
the liver blood tests may be raised and the viral load may be raised. These are phases where you should treat. There is a little bit of controversy and debate as to whether or not if you identify someone that appears to be changing from the state of immunotolerance to inactive carrier, going through an immune active stage, should you give that person a month or two to have the possibility of converting to an inactive carrier? This is something that is discussed, and I think most guidelines would suggest observing for a month or two to see if an inactive carrier state has been achieved before committing someone to many years, possibly lifelong antivirals. This brings us on to the topic of treatment of hepatitis B. And I think when it comes to treatment, it's very important not to lose the main overview of why we would treat. The reason to treat hepatitis B is to reduce the risk of liver cancer and reduce the risk of liver fibrosis or cirrhosis. The consideration is that in the setting of being an inactive carrier, you are unlikely to alter that risk significantly, and therefore treatment would not be indicated. Another reason to consider treatment would be in the setting of a pregnant woman with a very high viral load to reduce risk of transmission to the unborn child. Specifically identifying patients to treat, you identify which guidelines you're going to go with. Most guidelines suggest treating those who have moderate to severe necroinflammation or fibrosis, and that terminology is not always completely helpful. It is very easy to identify some people, so the people with high viral loads, and we use viral loads greater than a threshold of 3.3 on a log scale, which is the equivalent of 20,000 copies per mil. So if someone has a high viral load and raised LFTs, it is obvious that they need treatment. Also, people with a low viral load and normal LFTs do not need treatment but need observation. However, it's a difficult scenario when either the LFTs are raised or the viral load is raised, but not both, because you're not sure if there's an occult fibrosis or if there's a co-pathology potentially causing liver damage. A liver biopsy in those patients can be useful to help decide if there is significant necroinflammation or fibrosis. Liver fibroscanner is a newer technology that is less invasive and can give you an idea of liver stiffness, a proxy for liver fibrosis. So if you have decided that your patient does require treatment, you have options of either oral agents, tenofovir or entecavir, or injectable agent of interferon. Interferon is actually recommended by the NICE guidelines in the UK as the first-line therapy for most settings because it is a finite duration of 1 year. And if you get a response, you will have saved the patient the requirement for being on expensive oral agents for many, many years. Unfortunately, the response rate to interferon is very poor, with only somewhat less than 10% of patients getting a sustained adequate response. When we're looking for a response with interferon, basically we are hoping that the interferon will convert the patient to the inactive carrier state. You do expect that there will probably remain some circulating virus, but you are hoping to have converted them from an active state into an inactive carrier state. If you're going for the oral agents, the treatment will be lifelong if you are starting the patient on treatment when they are E antigen negative to begin with, or if you are starting them on oral agents at the time that they are E antigen positive, you can treat for a duration of time of 6 months after they have converted to E antibody positive. At that time, you can do a trial of stopping and see is there a flare or have you properly converted them to the inactive carrier state at this point. The two oral agents that are used are entecavir and tenofovir. Patients should be monitored in clinic on an intermittent basis, and patients should all have a baseline ultrasound, regular assessment for hepatocellular carcinoma by doing screening blood tests of alpha-fetoprotein, and those who are at higher risk, which can be based on age and ethnicity, will need more frequent ultrasounds as well. This was a very brief overview, hopefully giving people a good introduction to hepatitis B and the overview thought processes that should go along with it. One of the trickiest things about hepatitis B is being comfortable in choosing the patients for whom you are not going to start treatment, and sometimes justifying long-term expensive treatment for certain patients as well.